Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to a new episode of Germany in Focus, a news podcast made possible by members of The Local. Today, we're talking about Germany's new citizenship law being voted on in the Bundestag. We're exploring why Germany's economy is being hit so hard and what that means for people living here. Deutsche Bahn has said it wants to run a direct train service from Germany to the UK. We're going to talk about whether this could become a reality and why progress has been so slow. An investigation revealed that the far-right Alternative for Germany, or AfD, met with extremists and other far-right individuals to discuss a deportation master plan targeting people with a foreign background. How concerned should we be about this? We'll get into all of that and hear from a political scientist. Lastly, we'll talk about the etiquette to know if you're going to a German party or gathering so you don't make the mistakes we've made. I'm Rachel Oxen, and I'm here in Berlin today once again with the Local Germany editor Rachel Stern and journalist Imogen Goodman. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hi, Rach.
How's it going?
Yeah, good. Good. I'm feeling very exhilarated, actually. I love the snow, as I've probably mentioned before. But yesterday, I managed to combine two of my big loves, snow and ice dipping, at once. So I went out with a friend to Krummelanke, which is a beautiful lake in a forest near Berlin. And we didn't have to break the ice, luckily, but we went in the water only for about 2 minutes or so. But that was enough. So that was really fun. Would recommend it if
That's
you're brave
amazing.
Enough.
I admire your bravery. I, on the other hand, was staying put and only looking at the snow from afar outside of the window.
That's also a legitimate way to do snow, I think, from inside the comfort of your home.
Definitely. Did you feel good after, Imogen? Like, did you feel some really good effect?
I did, yeah. I mean, it was horrible. To be honest, it was horrible getting changed afterwards. That's always the hardest part, trying to get back into your warm clothes. But we weren't actually the most hardcore people there. We saw a woman straight afterwards who went for a proper swim, not even dipping, just swimming, doing laps. And I just thought, wow, that's another level. But you do just feel this real buzz for the rest of the day, even if you're only in for a minute.
I think the Germans are made of hardy stuff.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it explains why in German you have the expression warm Dusche, like warm shower, to kind of mean somebody who's weak because they're taking a warm shower versus a cold one.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with a warm shower.
Agreed.
Great. Before we get into it, I have a couple of service announcements. We are going to do an episode soon answering your questions about life in Germany. So if there's something you want us to try and answer, maybe it's about culture, politics, or food, you can submit a question in the survey in the show notes. And please leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcast. We love to hear your feedback. Let's get into the big news stories of the week. We're starting off with the new naturalization law because it is scheduled to be voted on by the German parliament on Friday, the day this episode comes out. Imogen, you spotted this on the agenda on Monday. We had previously thought it was going to be a little bit later, but seems to be happening this week, if all goes to plan. Is it going to be passed in the Bundestag?
Yes, we certainly hope so. And honestly, there have been so many delays to this law. We've been following it. If anyone else has been following it with us, they will know that there's just hurdle after hurdle. So when I didn't originally see it listed on the Bundestag website, I thought, okay, there's another delay. It's going to be February. But luckily, it now seems to have been snuck back back onto the agenda for the end of the week, so for Friday. And they are doing the third and second readings at once. There should be a vote, and we're really expecting that to pass. The other significant thing is that this is the last chance opposition parties like the Christian Democrats or CDU have to kind of kick up a fuss about these plans. And I'm sure there are going to be some quite grumpy faces in the Bundestag on Friday. But luckily, there isn't much they can do at this stage to stop the law passing. That's because the three traffic light coalition parties, the Social Democrats, the Greens, and the Free Democrats, collectively have a majority in the Bundestag. So we think all of their combined votes are going to see this law pass easily, which is great news.
You mentioned there's some opposition. What are the obstacles that this law could face in the Bundestag, or what are they going to be moaning about, basically?
Yeah, no, that's right. It's no secret that the CDU and their sort of sister party in Bavaria, the CSU, are really dead set against any liberalisation of citizenship or immigration laws. And there are some key features of this law, like permitting multiple nationalities or dual nationality or short residence requirements for citizenship that they really do not like. So their argument, and they've been using this line for quite a long time, is that naturalization should come at the end of a successful integration process and not at the start of it, by which I think they kind of mean they want foreigners to jump through hoop after hoop after hoop, live here almost a decade, but basically how it is now, to kind of prove themselves before they get the privilege of becoming German. So as a last-ditch attempt to kind of make their views known and try and sort of tighten up this law, they have put quite a few amendments on the table that are going to be considered on Friday. So one of these is relating to the recognition of Israel and the state of Israel. They seem to want foreigners to have to sign some kind of statement saying Israel has a right to exist before they can naturalize as Germans. And there are also ideas on the table about potentially limiting naturalization to people who have been employed for the past 2 years at the very least. So no one who's had a bit of a break from work or been on benefits at all could naturalize. In my view, it's highly unlikely that any of these amendments will actually make it into the law. And like I say, the governing parties do have this comfortable majority, but we can definitely expect some heated debates and, you know, as I say, some scowling faces in the Bundestag.
Definitely. And these points have already been debated on quite a bit by the coalition itself, haven't they? Because the law has been tightened, the draft law has been tightened around anti-Semitism. There's been discussion about people on benefits and things like that. So it has went through quite a few transformations anyway.
Definitely. I think the FDP in particular has been pushing to kind of tighten it up in that regard, either when it comes to making sure people are financially stable when they get a German passport, that they're not in their own way immigrating into the welfare system. And of course, they've also been pushing to make sure that anyone that's been convicted of an anti-Semitic crime will never be able to become German. So that has been acknowledged in the law. And I think it looks like all the parties, governing parties, are happy with it. So as I say, these amendments seem like they're dead in the water.
So on Friday, keep an eye out on the Local Germany site. We will, of course, be reporting on all the developments, and we'll add any updates in the show notes. Just to remind everyone that this new law will allow people to hold dual or multiple citizenships. It reduces the required residency needed to apply for German citizenship from 8 to the current 5 years, or even 3 years if you're well integrated and have C1 level German. There are also some carve-outs for the over 67s and some other changes. We'll link to a story in the show notes with all this information. So Imogen, what happens next then?
Well, we're hoping that the vote on Friday really marks the end of a really long wait for foreigners in Germany. So the end of this long parliamentary process and, you know, all the various votes that needed to happen. And obviously, things won't change overnight. So we're expecting at least a 3-month implementation phase after this. What we're hearing from sources in government is that the law is still on track to be in force by April. So the wait is almost over, but there are going to be a few more months that we're going to have to kind of count down the days. So as you say, that means in April, hopefully, anyone who has their citizenship application accepted will no longer have to give up their previous passport, that things will be quicker for people after April. And as you say, that there are going to be certain groups who things are a bit easier for when it comes to things like language tests.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that, Imogen. We're excited to see what happens. Reports this week show Germany is not doing so well economically and is looking like the recession will continue. So, of course, this has a knock-on effect on all of our lives for those who are living here. Rachel, can you tell us more about the latest recession news and why Germany's economy isn't doing so well?
Yeah, Rach. So Germany's Federal Statistics Office announced this week that the German economy shrunk by 0.3% in 2023 due to multiple crises. And unfortunately, this year doesn't seem like it's going to bring so much improvement. After those figures came out, the head of global research at the Dutch bank ING said that Germany looks set to have its first 2 years in a row of a recession since the early 2000s. And this drop, as I mentioned, is due to several factors. Germany is basically in a perpetual crisis mode. So following Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February 2022, energy prices went soaring and food costs also spiked. And while those costs have come down a little bit, now we also have the conflict in the Middle East to worry about, which is causing a lot of insecurity. And there's also the current budget crisis in which Germany is scrambling to fill a 17 billion euro deficit in its budget.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very good. And this is also bad news because more companies could cut jobs, which we've already seen a lot of in Germany in the last year. I know a lot of people who have been laid off from their startup or another company in Germany. And the government is already cutting back on spending, like you mentioned, because of this budget crisis. So what's going on with inflation? Is this getting any better?
It got better and then it got worse again.
Oh,
so, yeah, I mean, inflation, as probably most people living here know, reached a record high at the end of 2022, about 10%. And it started to steadily go down in the last months of last year. But it rose all in all 5.9% in 2023, which marks the second highest level since reunification in the early 90s. And it's driven a lot by high consumer prices. So just to give you an idea, bread and cereal products became 16.4% more expensive, dairy products and eggs, as well as some products like sugar and jam, rose by 15.7%, and fish and vegetables also went up. But anybody who adheres to a German diet will be pleased that at least one price has gone down. Now, butter is almost 18% cheaper.
Wow. You know what I can't believe? When I go into a supermarket in Berlin, and olive oil is like 10 euros now or something. What is that about? It's crazy, right?
It is crazy. It is crazy. I feel like the cost of my average shop has gone up 25% easily.
Yeah. Easily, yeah.
And also in the restaurants and cafes, they have the VAT, which we mentioned before, which has gone up. So they're feeling it and it's more expensive to eat out as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do we reckon things will change anytime soon? Basically, is there any good news?
So some economists have said that there's a small glimmer of hope. Amid the rise in inflation, there's also strong real wage growth, which means that private consumption in particular is likely to pick up again. And coupled with the increased demand for German exports around the world, the GDP as a whole could grow this year.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Rachel. Let's move on to some travel news. So this is pretty cool. Deutsche Bahn, that's Germany's state-owned rail operator, has said it is interested in running a direct train between Germany and the UK that would go through the Channel Tunnel. Imogen, What do we know so far?
Yeah, this is really exciting news for Brits in particular, but also anyone who loves visiting the UK. Though, unfortunately, I do have to say nothing is quite set in stone just yet. So
we
unfortunately,
can't get ahead don't
try and book this online just yet. This story basically all relates to Deutsche Bahn saying that it really is making it a priority to launch a direct ICE, so high-speed service, running from Germany to the UK, and most likely from Frankfurt to London. This actually isn't a new idea. Way back in 2013, which feels like a lifetime ago, Deutsche Bahn did float plans for this service. So their idea was to have it start in Frankfurt, as I say, and go all the way to London via Cologne, Brussels, Lille in France, and finally go via the Channel Tunnel to the UK capital. Unfortunately, this never got off the ground, but hopefully if this does happen in the near future, it would run on a kind of similar route. And I just have to say that would be a huge improvement over the current situation, which does require people who want to travel by train changing in Brussels. Sometimes this works out okay, but the trains aren't always that well coordinated. One piece of good news, which we have talked about on the podcast, is that there is a new night train that does run directly from Berlin to Brussels, and it syncs up quite well with the Eurostar, but I still feel like a direct train would be another step up entirely.
What's holding it up then, since they've been talking about this since 2013?
Yeah, you know, you would expect there to have been some movement in 10 years or 11 years now. but apparently they've just been stuck on a few technical and safety-related issues. So the fact that the infrastructure in the Channel Tunnel just isn't quite there for what Deutsche Bahn needs. So for the entire 3 decades since the Channel Tunnel was opened, it's actually turns 30 this year, Eurostar has run a monopoly there. But now the operator of the tunnel, so Getlink is the company, is saying they want to double the number of services to and from the UK, from Europe. So unfortunately, there is a crucial bit of equipment used by European rail operators, which is called the European Train Control System, I believe. And that currently isn't supported in the Channel Tunnel. So that needs to be there before Deutsche Bahn can run its high-speed rail through the tunnel. The good news is that Getlink say, we're on it. Hopefully sometime in the next sort of 5 years, we will have this technology in place and European operators that aren't Eurostar will be able to run their services to and from London. So yeah, in the medium term, not much is going on, but hopefully sometime in the coming years, we'll see this get off the ground.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I did think Eurostar ran the Channel Tunnel.
That's what I thought. Never heard of this Getlink company, but there you go.
Yeah, so 5 years, hopefully.
Yes.
So we have heard a lot recently about night trains being expanded in Europe. And in December, the Paris-Berlin night train relaunched, which was really exciting. I haven't been on it yet, but sounds cool. But there has been some criticism of it already.
Yes. Yeah, this is actually a real shame because I know a lot of people, and including us in this booth, had really high hopes for all of these night trains. And, you know, it is lovely to see all these new links springing up and this kind of transition towards rail kind of taking off. That said, there are criticisms, and unfortunately, there do seem to be a lot of barriers to actually taking advantage of these cool services that we're reporting on. According to German train watchdog Bahn für alle, so or Rail for Everyone, there are two big factors that are really driving people away from these new night services and back onto planes and into cars. And one major factor is price. So a lot of these night trains do offer budget seats, and they advertise prices that are well under 100 euros one way, for instance. But the reality is that the tickets do tend to cost a lot more than the advertised price, and especially if you want a good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. So one Twitter user actually recently wanted to book an overnight ticket from Vienna to Hamburg, and he pointed out that even on some random day in winter, which is not expected to be a particularly busy time, a single cabin would have set him back almost 600 euros. So as he said, that is the equivalent of flying business class and staying overnight at one of the priciest hotels in Hamburg. So it seems pretty obvious which one most people would choose in this scenario. An uncomfortable night's sleep in a rail carriage or business class in a five-star hotel. So another issue that Barnfa Alle mentioned is the complicated nature of booking these tickets. They say it's completely unuser-friendly and it's just confusing for people. One of the reasons for this is actually that these night trains do tend to have several different kind of stakeholders or kind of different businesses and operators involved. But as the rail watchdog pointed out, people really don't want to have to do a ton of research just to know.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Where to book your ticket. So yeah, unfortunately, we do have these services, but they don't seem to quite be attractive enough yet to really be the big transition that we were all hoping, I think.
Last week, a report by the non-profit investigative journalism newsroom Correctiv found that officials from the far-right party Alternative for Germany, or the AfD, attended a meeting along with extremists where a so-called master plan to deport foreigners and people with a migration background in Germany was discussed. This is a concept known as remigration, which is well known among right-wing extremist circles. We'll hear from a political scientist in a moment. But first, Rachel, can you tell us more about this meeting? Who reportedly attended and what was talked about?
Yeah, so this is about an event that took place near Potsdam, and it included high-ranking members of the AfD, including an aide to leader Alice Weidel, lawyers, doctors, business people, and even some members of a fringe element of the Christian Democrats. And this took place at the end of November last year. And they're said to have discussed plans for this remigration concept. So in other words, the forced expulsion of foreigners and even Germans with a migration background in the event of the AfD coming to power. And at this meeting, which Correctiv was undercover at, Martin Sellner, who's the leader of the identitarian movement in Austria, presented his master plan for remigration. And that included saying that so-called unassimilated citizens in Germany could be deported to a quote-unquote model state in North Africa.
Do we know what else happened there, according to this investigation?
Yeah, so from the investigation, it seems like it was a networking event in which quote-unquote experts could trade far-right ideas and talk about how to promote them. It was kind of an elitist event because there was reportedly a suggested minimum donation of 5,000 euros just to be in attendance. And the report said that there were also appeals for donations, and it also talked about how to make the AfD's ideas more widespread among the German population, especially among young people who the AfD wants to target on platforms like TikTok and YouTube.
Yeah, I think the striking thing about all of this, and it is a truly shocking story, is just how much the focus has shifted from exchanging, talking about these kind of fringe ideas to really asking questions of how to implement them. So the legal consequences, for instance, of trying to deport someone with a German passport who, for whatever reason, just isn't German enough for their liking. And it really speaks to this idea that the Afdi do feel emboldened, that they feel that they are on the that they can smell the power on the other side of a few elections, particularly in states like Saxony and Thuringia, who are where the Afdi are doing very well and who are voting, going to the polls this year. So it's very frightening to see them suddenly focus on this question of the practicalities of enacting some of these ideas, which are anti-democratic, dehumanizing, and frankly unconstitutional.
Yeah, and also that, you know, wealthy businessmen were reportedly at this event and you know, that it was kind of upstanding members of communities, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing that Correctiv actually said was that, okay, although this was a secret meeting, it wasn't that hard to find out about. They are not trying to keep this completely under wraps. There is no sense of that this is this huge kind of scandal. There are a lot of people admitting to being there. And that just shows that compared to maybe 10, 20 years ago, these far-right ideas have really entered the mainstream a lot more.
Rachel, what has been the reaction to all of this? And what has the AFD said about it?
So the AFD did say that some of their members were there, although AFD officials denied any plans to adopt the proposal presented by Selner. And the AFD said that Roland Hartvig, who was the aide to Alice Weidel, had presented a social media project at the meeting, but he said that they would not, quote unquote, bring Mr. Selner's ideas on migration policies into the party, and also added that it would, quote, not change its immigration policies based on the individual ideas of a speaker at the meeting. But that said, the meeting drew a lot of outrage from people across the political spectrum who argued that the AFD's presence in the first place showed their support of remigration. And that's not to mention that some chapters have directly used the word on campaign slogans, so they can't exactly hide that that's not one of their ideas. And some have pointed out the really eerie parallels to the Nazis, who had an initial plan to deport European Jews to Madagascar. And one FDP parliamentary group leader said, oh, quote unquote, the plans to expel millions of people are reminiscent of the darkest chapter in German history. The research cited by media organization Correctiv shows that the AFD deeply rejects democracy and our liberal basic order. And the news of this meeting also led to mass protest over the weekend against the AFD. And tens of thousands of people took part, including German Chancellor Olaf Scholz and Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock.
Thanks for that, Rachel. Let's hear now from Kai Arzheimer, a political scientist and German politics expert based at the University of Mainz. I started off by asking Kai how worried we should be that this is being talked about by the AfD and others at a meeting like this in Germany.
Yeah, it's really like a blast from the past. It reminds you what happened in Germany in the 1930s and 40s. Obviously, we have a party which is the second strongest opposition party in parliament, the strongest party in the eastern states, deliberating how they could deport not just foreigners from Germany, but also Germans who have an unusual surname or whose skin is of a different shade or who have the wrong kind of religion. This is very scary. And I'm, in fact, very worried about these developments. Unfortunately, not surprised, but still very worried.
So we know that the AFD is openly anti-immigration. We've heard about that in the past. But this investigation does show, as you've kind of mentioned, how xenophobic and racist the party is. Do you think this is damaging for the party?
So back in 2017, 2018, 2019, I believe all this comes to light. Yes, this will severely limit support for the party at perhaps 10 or 12%, like previous right-wing extremist parties, like the NPD, for instance. And that was also the worry of the previous party leadership. He installed a task force to keep the party on the right side of the constitution, if you wish. Didn't succeed. There has been a drip feed of revelations, you know, that the former MP for the party was involved in this plot to basically overthrow the constitution. There have been news about WhatsApp groups where other MPs for the party chatted with so-called Reichsbürgers, dreamed of a revolution. But it hasn't made a dent so far in support for the AfD. So unfortunately, those perhaps 20-22% of the German population who intend to vote for that party are not in somehow dissuaded by all these revelations about revolution. So I don't know what has to happen before these people change their minds.
Wow. And we do have three elections in Eastern Germany coming up later this year where the AfD is very high in the polls. So do you think that this could even increase support for them this coming out? Or do you think maybe it could stabilize a little bit?
Well, we have to see how this will play out over time. These revelations came round about a week ago. There have been demonstrations on the weekend. The other parties are picking up this story. There's renewed talk about a ban of the party. And I'm not sure 2 or 3 or 4 weeks down the line how public opinion will respond to this new revelation. So it might make a dent in their support. It might perhaps encourage some of their most extreme voters to come to the fore. What I think is important is that ordinary Germans wake up to this danger and that those who are disaffected with politics but not happy to basically expel their neighbors from Germany, that they stop non-voting or reconsider their vote for the AfD and instead vote for democratic parties.
So do you think this could be or should be a wake-up call for Germans?
Hopefully, yes. I mean, last week when the story broke, the president of the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution, Thomas Haldenbaum, he said, I think, a very clever thing. He said that the center of German society is still asleep and is sleepwalking into a crisis of democracy, and that ordinary people have to realize the danger that the AfD presents to liberal democracy in Germany.
Could the AfD ever be banned? And how would that look?
Yeah, it's a tricky question. So it is possible to ban parties in Germany, but the hurdles are very high. Last time it happened was in 1956 with the Communist Party. And there have been 2 attempts to ban the NPD, an openly right-wing extremist neo-Nazi party. And both attempts failed because the only institution that can ban a party in Germany is the Federal Constitutional Court. So the government or the National Parliament, the Federal Council would have to ask the court to ban the AfD. They would have to present evidence that the AfD is actively working against the democratic constitution. And then a supermajority of 2/3 of the court would have to vote in favor of such a ban. So there is a real risk that this could backfire. Imagine the government going to court and the court saying, no, we're not going to ban them. That would be a boon for the AfD. They would have like a stamp of approval by the highest court in the country. This is why so far there is not too much political support for such a ban. But at the moment, there could be a change of heart, if you wish, within the political class because of the danger that the AfD presents for democracy.
And how likely is it that the AfD could enter into power in a state or even the federal government in future?
I think at the federal level, it's quite, I wouldn't say impossible, but highly unlikely. At the state level, I think this year's elections will be crucial. The AfD is particularly strong in Thuringia and Sachsen, and they are also particularly radical in these two states. And still, they are the strongest party. They have around 35% perhaps of the vote. And depending on the performance of the smaller parties, whether they manage to overcome the 5% threshold or not, that might bring them awfully close to a majority in parliament. And even if they are just the strongest party, there is a chance that a president of parliament for the AfD, you know, usually the strongest party gets the presidency of parliament. And in Thuringen, there are real worries because there's like a gap in the state constitution that could give power to a future AfD parliamentary president to swear in Björn Höcke as minister president of Thuringen. And then we are really in uncharted territory. This guy is a right-wing extremist. This is not a controversial statement. This is a factual statement. There are rulings by German courts that you are allowed to call him a fascist because this is not libel. This is factual. And this guy could get the levers of power of a small German state, but still a German state. So he would be the head of the administration. The police, the state police would be under his control. This is scary. It's not impossible. It's perhaps not even highly likely. It's still up in the air. It depends on how the political process pans out over the next 8 or 9 months.
Before we finish for the day, we're going to talk about German parties. I know it's January and the festive season feels like a long time ago, but I feel like one way to get through the winter is to socialize and attend some gatherings and maybe even a full-blown party, if that's your thing. So guys, let me ask you, what is something people should know when going to a German party or social gathering, whether it's like a venue, bar, restaurant, club, or someone's house?
Well, my view on this, as a little caveat, my view may be somewhat skewed because Berlin is definitely a big party city. So I'm really sorry if this isn't appropriate for people living in kind of smaller towns or sleepier villages, somewhere in rural Baden-Württemberg or something. But speaking from my experience, one thing I've noticed, and that actually used to really annoy me, is how late people tend to go out here, and also how late they kind of turn up to things. So you can try your best to say, oh, get here by seven, guys. No one's turning up before nine. So actually in England, that's quite a contrast, I guess, in the UK in general, because of our alcohol laws, people tend to do the after work drinks thing. It's not weird to say, oh, let's go for a pint at 5:30 or 6. And in Berlin, like I say, you're lucky if you get someone to leave the house before nine. That said, and this is why this is my tip, as time has gone on, I have realised that turning up late is a bit of a self-preservation thing because pubs and bars are open really late and sometimes they just don't close at all. There are plenty of 24-hour kind of kneipen about. So in the UK, your night out is kind of capped at around midnight max on a Saturday. And here it's pretty normal to find bars that are open till like 4 a.m. on a school night. So my tip would be, do not try and mix the British drinking times with the German drinking times because you may well die of alcohol poisoning. Don't start at 6 p.m. and go till 4 a.m. Just be happy to take your time getting ready, turn up at a relaxed sort of time, and just be aware that you may also be staying out quite late because that seems to be how things work here.
So I'll share my perspective as a parent who probably goes to bed just when people are heading out of the house. Unfortunately, I don't have any super exciting anecdotes from a big night out, at least not recent ones, but I can share some tips that I picked up from dinner parties here, especially my American perspective just of dining etiquette. So one thing that still kind of catches me off guard is that as American, when there's something like a pizza on the table, I instinctively want to pick up a big slice with my hands. But as I've noticed from Germans and many other Europeans, they kind of daintily cut the slice, even if it's one of these thick slices, with a fork and knife. So I've had to exhibit a little bit more patience in this regard. And I also noticed just how often people use a knife. For us Americans, we only really use a knife if the food requires it, like it's a big juicy steak, which I don't usually eat anyways as a vegetarian. But I've noticed that, you know, Germans will use their butter knife for everything, even just separating the salad leaves. So at German dinner parties, I've had to eat a little bit slower and be more mindful and not just kind of scarf everything down. So that's a fun observation, I think.
So Rachel has you covered if you're an American coming to Germany and thinking about cutlery, I guess, or non-use of cutlery with a pizza. I love this advice, guys. I would add that don't try and organize like a kitty or like a whip round, like a buy people rounds of drinks in the pub. I made that mistake when I first arrived in Germany and people definitely thought I was trying to steal from them. You guys know what a kitty is, right? Do you know, Rachel?
You've talked about it before, but inform us.
I'm so boring. But yeah, you know, when you like, you all put your money together and then you just buy rounds with it all night. In Germany, you just pay for the drinks yourself, basically. You might, the odd time, buy a drink for your friend, but in a big group, you would just pay yourself, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's definitely, the round culture doesn't really happen, which is a shame. I think there's something quite nice about it, about the kind of informal trust that you have that someone's going to get you back. But no, you've got your own money, you've got your own drinking schedule, and that's that.
Exactly. And definitely bring a drink if you're going to a party. I think you should bring a bottle of wine, a few beers. I mean, I think that's quite obvious.
And also for a housewarming party, bread and salt are the two things. Although if you want to be clever about it, like my friend was, you can bring round beer and say it's kind of like fermented bread as a way around that if it's a bit weird to turn up with a loaf of bread. But that's traditional. So that's a nice little way to impress your German friends who have just moved.
I love that. And also take your shoes off when you're going into someone's house. Most Germans do not like you wearing shoes and things. I feel like I love that. No, I mean like in the house.
Yeah, you know, Americans tend to wear their shoes inside, but now there's no way I could imagine again wearing shoes inside. It's just too dirty. So it's nice to leave them at the door and not worry about filth of your whatever falls on the floor.
That's it for this week. Thank you so much to all our listeners. As always, we will add links in the show notes for the stories we've been talking about today. This week's panelists have been Rachel Stern and Imogen Goodman. Our guest was Kai Artsheimer, and our sound engineer is Reese Edwards. I'm Rachel Loxton, and we hope you enjoyed listening. We'll be back again next week. Until then, take care.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.